welcome to Lennox Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 87. Happy New Year, everyone. It's January the 1st, 2011. Boy, how long is it going to take me to remember to put 2011 down? In this podcast, I've got a tip from Osmart, and his tip is on DVTM, which is DVTM is a virtual terminal manager, tiling window management for the console. DVTM brings the concept of tiling window management, popularized by X11 Windows managers like DWM, to the console. As a console window manager, it tries to make it easy to work with multiple console-based programs like Vim, Mutt, CMUS, or IRSSI. Also in this podcast, I have been fooling around with OpenBox. It is now what I'm using on a daily basis, and I'm really enjoying it. You can really configure a lot of different things with it, especially I like the XML files. Some people don't like XML files for configuration, but I do. I'm pretty used to them. And I like using it for the keyboard and the mouse configuration. You can really put some nice bindings in for the keyboard and the mouse. I really enjoy the about OpenBox is switching between desktops. I've got four desktops, and I can either scroll with the mouse or press the window key F1, F2, F3, F4, and scroll through the different desktops. And also another part of the podcast is going to be talking a little bit about the new Xorg 1.9 without HAL. And here we go again. Now we've got to learn another way of doing Xorg configuration. It's one of the things I hate the most doing, to be honest with you. There's nothing worse than when you go ahead and you do a new install or you do an upgrade or and you have no X, because I'm so dependent on X anymore to do stuff that it really gets me upset when I can't get into X, and then I have to backtrack and figure out how in the world to get it running. Oh, so okay. So first, here we'll have that tip from Osmart.
So I was listening to the podcast the other week, and Dave was talking about IRSSI and screen, and it reminded me of a small tool called DVTM. It's available in the Belac overlay at the moment, I think. And what it is a dynamic virtual terminal manager. So it means that you can have one SSH shell, or one SSH connection open, and have multiple shells within that SSH connection. So you only need really one term per SSH connection. For me, it simplifies things. I like to have it as simple as possible. and pretty much, I suppose I'll talk about the default configuration that comes with it, since it's probably, you know, probably a good place to start. So to start off, it's Control G is the mod key. So if you do Control G C, that will create a window. What I'd call a window in this case. Some other features would be to maximize that current window, which is mod M, and change the focus to say the third window would be mod 3. Page up, page down is mod page up, and then or mod page down, and you can cycle between I think a few different layouts. So you've got a grid, which is, as it sounds, it's a tiled layout, and then you'll have vertical or horizontal stacks, and then there's a maximize mode, and basically with the maximize mode, it means that it looks, for all intensive purposes, as you've just got one shell there, but then you can cycle between these windows using mod enter, And one thing I find handy is to just have the man page for DVTM in one of the windows so that you can sort of refer to it right at the start. The way it's configured is pretty cool. I tend to like this. There's a file, a config file stored in /etc/portage/saveconfig/atmisc/DVTM, and you can change some of the settings in there and then just re-emerge, and when you re-emerge it'll have the new configuration. So that's about it. There's a whole heap of other options in there, but pretty much what this lets you do is just have multiple shells within one SSH connection, and it means one term can be divided up into, say, three different shells, for instance, and it's just handy sometimes to have, you know, different windows just within that term. Anyway, hope it's useful to someone. See you later.
All right, hey, thanks, Osmart. I fooled around with it a little bit, and I just didn't spend enough time with it to really get it going good, but it looks pretty neat. I don't really use IRISSI that much. I use it a little bit in some of my remote servers, but the main thing I use is XChat. I'm kind of a GUI guy, so I do know IRSSI a little bit, but I don't use it on a daily basis all the time. And the DVTM looks pretty cool as far as you could put four different terminals inside one screen on a remote server. So that looks pretty cool. Oh, OpenBox. All right. Now, OpenBox, basically, when you go to set up OpenBox, all the files are in .config, in your home directory, .config, and then inside OpenBox. And inside there, there's a menu XML file and a RC XML file. Now, the menu XML file is pretty self-explanatory. I followed the Gentoo guide. It was one of the many guides I followed. I'll put all of the links to the different stuff that I ran across at linuxcrazy.com. And right now it's really cool with OpenBox. Right now I'm recording it on desktop number 2. And on desktop number 1, I have Firefox open and some of my notes for the podcast. So just in those two desktops, it's real easy to flip back and forth. And Audacity is continuing to record as I flip back and forth, so I can just leave Audacity running, and it's going to continue recording. And then I can go ahead and, kind of refresh my memory so that what I wanted to talk about. And so after I emerged OpenBox, then I went ahead and followed the guide for Gentoo, and it's a short guide. It doesn't go into it in a lot of depth, but it gives you the basics. And one of the important things to do is to go ahead and emerge Menu Maker. And the default menu that comes with OpenBox is just a default menu. That's what it is. It doesn't really have anything to do with what you might have installed on your system. So some things may work, some things may not work. So you need to go ahead and update the menu. So you use Menu Maker to go ahead and generate a basic OpenBox menu.xml. And that's M-M-A-K-E-R space dash V space capital open, capital O-P-E-N, capital B-O-X 3. So that what that does is it tells M-M-A-K-E-R to generate a menu for OpenBox, because it'll generate menus for different window managers. So that'll give you a menu that has a whole bunch of the stuff that you have installed. Now, you might, every once in a while, you might find that there's something that you have installed that you can't find, or you don't know, you can't see, you don't see it on the menu, don't be alarmed. It's real easy to edit that menu. You can just look at any of the other entries, and you just copy another entry and just add the information for the new entry. It's real easy. If you've edited any menus in Fluxbox or anything else, it's generally the same. I went ahead and created a top-level menu called Favorites, and I just stuck all my favorites in there. But you really don't use the menu very much. I mean, I got it so in case I can use it, it's easy to use with the favorites. But basically what you do is you use the keyboards. You set up those key bindings, and is in the next file that we'll talk about, which is in that file rc.xml. Now, rc.xml, that's where you can set up all your key bindings and mouse bindings also. There's a whole bunch of information on the internet about how to set up these two files and a lot of tips and tricks. Again, I'll have those links at linuxcrazy.com for anyone that wants to check it out. One of the other good information spots to check out for the OpenBox initial configuration is OpenBox, the Gentoo wiki. And there they talk about a whole bunch of different stuff. They talk about the menu configuration, as I talked about. They talk about the file, that RC configuration. And they also talk about auto start is starting up different applications when you first start OpenBox. And they also talk about creating custom keyboard shortcuts. And now with auto start, I didn't actually use the auto start. I tried using the auto start, and either I wasn't doing correctly or I couldn't figure it out. But I went ahead and just made my own little auto start file. And what I did was, here it is. I'll go ahead over here. I just created a little bash script, very simple little bash script, just to start up a couple of the applications that I wanted to start. And all I'm starting is Tent2, which is a really cool application. It's a panel. In the screenshot that you'll see the panel. On my particular screenshot, it's up top, and it's highly configurable, and it looks really nice. It's transparent. You can make it as transparent as you want. Mine is just like a tinted, the tent says, Tent2. And you can customize everything. You can customize. Mine is actually on one desktop. I have dual screen, so it's actually on one desktop, and everything is on the one desktop. But I can, up in that panel, I can click on anything that's up there. I have a whole bunch of stuff. Right now I have maybe 10 different things up there, and it'll go to whichever desktop that particular application is on. So let's say I have a terminal open on desktop number 4, and I click up into the Tent panel, it jumps all the way over to desktop 4 to that application. And the other thing that I go ahead and start is Conky. So really I'm just using the basic OpenBox, and I'm using the Tent2 as the panel, and then I'm using Conky as a system monitor. And then right now, see, it's real easy. I want to take a break, so all I'll do is up top I have Audacity up in that panel. I can just click on Audacity, and I can go ahead and pause Audacity. So that makes getting around the desktop really easy. It's really cool. Another thing I wanted to talk about that I forgot, but I'll go ahead and throw it in there right now. When Oxmart sent me this tip, the file was in M4A format, which I'm not exactly sure, but I think he said he did that on his phone. And I'm actually a little bit jealous because his recording sounds excellent. But I went ahead to try to open it up in Audacity, and I couldn't get it to... It wouldn't open. I had to convert it first. And for that, we go back to our old Mr. Reliable M player. Actually, what you do is you go ahead and play it, and then you go ahead and dump it into a WAV file. So I did that. I have that little command here, and I'll go ahead and post it at linuxcrazy.com just so in case anybody else wants to convert an M4A file and be able to use it on Audacity, they can. Okay, and another great place to go for the configuration of OpenBox is ArchWiki. They have a great wiki, Arch does, and a lot of the same stuff that the Arch Linux users do, we do, especially for configuration, because they basically install just a base system, and their applications that they install, like OpenBox, pretty much is just stock. So their starting point is pretty much the same as us, so configure it about the same way that we do, as I say we, as Gen 2 users. So on their, the Arch Wiki, there they talk about obconfig, which is a, it helps you configure OpenBox, and I think it's actually right into rc.xml, and then there's also a obmenu, and it's a basically the same thing. It's a little GUI for menu.xml. And they also talk about menu maker for the initial menu or updating the menu. They even talk about how to get the GTK themes and that to work properly. I'm pretty sure this box, I used to run Fluxbox on it. So I had already set up my .gtk files. And I believe that's what it's reading now for OpenBox, because I don't have any trouble. Another thing that might be happening is, because this is a GNOME box, like I had GNOME running on here, that it's picking up some of the configuration from GNOME. That's possible too. I wouldn't really know unless I just installed a basic OpenBox without anything else installed. For whatever reason, OpenBox really goes well with GNOME, because I use a lot of GNOME applications here in with OpenBox. OpenBox, is the way I'm using it, is basically just the base. And all I have that you can actually see is OpenBox and the Tent 2. But when I open up other applications like Nautilus or GNOME MPlayer, they all run exactly the way they would on GNOME if I was running this from the GNOME desktop. So all the configurations were carried over. That could be what's happened. It might make it easier if you don't really care about a super minimal install. If you install a basic GNOME, configure GNOME with your GTK themes, the mouse pointer, and different stuff like that that you want, and then go ahead and install OpenBox and use OpenBox like I am, but all the GTK themes and all that stuff works just fine. Nautilus works fine. I can mount its auto-mounting drives, USB drives. It's auto-mounting CDs when I put it in. It's auto-mounting DVDs, all that, when I put it in. And a lot of that configuration must still be carried over from GNOME. The other fun thing to configure was this Tent 2. You can configure it and make it do just about anything. It looks really nice. And I just took the basic configuration and the how-to here that you read up on, that's on code.google.com, Tent 2. It explains everything pretty nicely as far as how to set everything up. And the fun thing about it is that if you started from the command line like I did when you were initially configuring it, then you just close the terminal, redo some more reconfiguring, start it up, and you can actually keep working on it, and you don't have to leave X at the time when you're working on it. You just start it up, see how it looks, close the terminal, and go ahead and do whatever editing you want to do, and then restart it back up from the terminal, and that way you can edit it and see your changes, shut it back down, do some more editing, and keep tweaking it until you get it exactly the way you want. And then you can go ahead and, like I did, set up a little bash script to start it up, or you can do that auto start file within OpenBox. My problem I had when I was using the auto start file from OpenBox, I don't think it was starting things in the correct order. I'm sure there's a way of doing it. I just got frustrated and didn't want to spend any more time with it. It's easy enough for me just to start OpenBox and then just start that little script. And it's only starting two things. It's just starting that tent two and then the Conky. And the Conky, there's a whole lot of how-tos around for Conky. And mine is just a basic one. I think I got the how-to. It's from the Gen 2 forums. The other thing that was a lot of fun to do with OpenBox was go ahead and create your own theme. The theme files, again, are really easy to work on. They're pretty much self-explanatory. There's not a whole lot of mystery to it. You just open up the theme, get one that you like pretty much, and if you want to tweak it, change the colors, change the fonts, change the lot. You can change everything. You just go ahead and play around with it. And that's one good thing that OB config is good for, is that you can edit to your theme a little bit. Just go into OB config, change to another theme, and then change right back, and your changes are come right up so that you can see your changes right away. And then you just keep tweaking it until you get a theme that you like real well. All right, the other thing you're going to want to set up is your .x defaults. Now, with OpenBox, you're going to be using a terminal a lot, so you want to set up your terminal the way that you're going to like it. So I use urxvt, and I use the .x defaults to go ahead and set it up the way that I want it, with the different transparency, the different fonts, the size, everything that I want. I also have in my .x defaults the configuration for a term, if I'm ever going to use that terminal. I also have changed a little bit of the XRXVT colors, and I also put in there a launcher for Firefox, and I also have, in case Xterm comes up, I have it for a basic configuration. Another thing that's really important in your .x defaults is you can go ahead and put your cursor theme in there. I went ahead and put that in there, and I also set up my XFT for fonts and a DPI, etc., there in that file. So what happens is when you're running programs that are not reading any other configuration files, let's say they're not a GNOME program, as an example, like Nautilus, that this way it gets its reads its different configuration from this .x defaults. Another file that is important for OpenBox, I'm pretty sure, is this .gtkrc-2.0. I got it set up so that it can actually get the GTK icon theme and a GTK theme. I just have it set up for a basic Tango, and the theme is ClearLux. And if you do a search, you could find a lot of people setting up their .gtkrc-2.0. What it does is again, for GTK applications that don't have configuration set up, this is a default file that will actually give them something to read, so that when they open up, let's say something like Firefox or Thunderbird, they'll open up with a default theme and their icons, etc. I also put some hint style tips in here for the fonts to make them a little bit easier for me to read. And that's all done in .gtkrc-2.0. And there's probably some other files here that I've edited somewhere along the line that maybe something in OpenBox that I'm using is reading. It's pretty easy to figure out. If you open something up and it doesn't look exactly the way that you want it to look, There's usually a pretty clear and easy way of configuring it. Here we go again with Dr. Google. He'll pretty much steer you in the right direction just about all the time. All right, well, that's pretty much all I can think about for OpenBox right now. Usually when I do these podcasts and I get done and I go ahead and edit it, then once I go ahead and upload them, then I'll get to the point where I'll remember, damn, I wanted to talk about this or that, you know, so, but that's okay too. That's about all I can think about for OpenBox. It's a lot of fun to use. It's really easy to configure. And if you've never used it, just go ahead and get started with it. Play around with it and you'll really enjoy it. Now here's something that I don't enjoy doing is this working with this XOR config. Just about the time I think I had it all figured out, working pretty good with HAL, I'd set up a few laptops. I'd set up my desktop here with running Nevada with dual screens. And I have everything pretty much set up the way that I want to. Here we go, and now we're going from XORG Server 1.7 to XORG Server 1.9, and we're getting rid of HAL, and we're going to go ahead and use UDEV, and we're going to have to learn a new way of configuring stuff. Now, I've also done a lot of reading on this, and still, I'm having a hard time figuring some stuff out. So, the problem that I have with reconfiguring XORG is that when you're reconfiguring something like OpenBox or TIT2 or Conky, you're already in X, so you can reconfigure, you can retry it, and go from there. When you're working with X, it gets a lot more scary to me because I don't want to lose X. So what happens is when you do these reconfigurations, sometimes you get in a real mess as far as like when the keyboard or the mouse doesn't work. So I guess the first thing I should do, but I never do it, I guess the first thing that I should do is probably go ahead and get a way that I can get out of X when it doesn't work. But now how are you going to get out of X if you don't have any keyboard? And also now I think you have to go ahead and configure Control Alt Backspace to get you out of X, even if the keyboard is working. I've gotten into X before, and I had no mouse and no keyboard, and then there's X. Now what do I do? And you know, you don't want to, you know, hard shut down and have to restart everything just because X isn't working. So what I've been doing is, but this is a luxury almost, I go ahead and SSH into the box from a laptop or another computer to the one that I'm, you know, configuring X with. That way, if something happens, that I can go ahead and just kill X from the SSH and go ahead and get out of X. There's probably an easier way, it's just I haven't ran across it. So now, with this new XORG, 1.9, like I said, it's going away from HAL. HAL is no more, and we're moving back into dev, UDEV. Now, these new features of the new XORG is UDEV backend support. Support for an XORG config-d configuration directory. And support for matching rules in the xorg.config. Back in 2006, support for hot plugging input devices was added, and up to server 1.7, the incarnation worked with HAL as the provider of the input devices. HAL is now depreciated and, under Linux, replaced with UDEV. Upon startup, the X server queries the active backend for a list of input devices and initializes them accordingly. When a new device is added at runtime, the server is notified and adds it at runtime. HAL and UDEV are mutually exclusive, so enabling one disables the other. Currently, UDEV is disabled by default. Well, that is if you're running 1.7. And it might even be by default in 1.9. I'm not exactly sure on that. Yeah, I think it was default for 1.8, but I think it's not default for 1.9. Most people will confuse HAL with EV Dev, although they have little or nothing to do with each other. Over the recent years, the XOR config supports has moved towards two overlapping goals: support partial XOR configs with the server filling in the rest and removing the need for an XOR config entirely. Now, I can tell you that this is, as it's moving forward, there's still no clear documentation that I have run across. I've gotten bits and pieces from different places. Xorg.config.d directory, there's also another spot that has that file. There's also another spot that has that directory. Yet it's located at user share x11 xorg.configd directory. Now, I think what happens is that first, etc., x11, xorg config is read. Then, etc., x11, xorg config.d directory is read. Then, if all else fails, the global ones will be in user share x11 xorg.config.d. Now, inside that file, right now, all I have is a 10-evdev.config. Now, this file I could move over to, etc., the xorg.config.d directory and use it. I'm pretty sure, though, because it's not moved over there, that if I didn't have an XOR config file at all, that it would be read as a default. So basically what they're doing is they're going to start putting the defaults inside this directory, the user share x11 XOR config directory. And so if you don't do any configuration yourself, if everything works fine, then the defaults evidently would work fine. But if you need to tweak anything, then you would tweak it in that xorgconfig.d directory. I think that's the proper way. For me, I tried fooling around with it, and I used a Nevada driver with dual screens, and I went back to using my basic xorg.config file. I even tried fooling around with the keyboard and the mouse configurations, and I never could get it to work right. I'm using the old mouse and keyboard drivers. Now, I don't think I'm using HAL, and I don't think I'm using UDEV much. I think what I'm actually using is the old drivers for the keyboard and the mouse. When I played around with it any time, I've always failed. And there's nothing worse than failing with the keyboard. The mouse, you can get by with it. But if you fail with the keyboard, you know, you're in trouble. Because you got no keyboard, you're through dealing. So once I got it working, I stopped fooling around with it. So I'm not going to tweak it anymore. It's almost like one of those things, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The keyboard's working fine now. The mouse is working fine. When I was playing around with it there for a while, the keyboard started acting all kind of crazy. Almost like a old type terminal, as far as when you backspaced, it jumped down. It was like pressing enter. And the mouse was, when I scrolled the mouse, it was jumping two and three instead of just jumping one. When I was trying to jump between different desktops, it was jumping two and three desktops instead of just walking through desktop one, desktop two, and all kind of crazy stuff like that. So I went ahead and removed everything that I had in there. And then I went ahead and I started checking to see exactly what I had been doing. And basically what I had been doing is I didn't even realize it, I've been using the old XOR drivers for the keyboard and the mouse. And evidently it's working fine, so I'm just going to leave it all alone. I'm not going to try to worry about it. Later on, when things get to be not working correctly, I'll worry about it at that point. But right now, everything's working fine, so I'm going to leave well enough alone. In recent years, the XOR config support has moved towards two overlapping goals. Support partial XOR configs with the server filling the rest and removing the need for an XOR config entirely. For most installations, the server now has the right defaults and is usable without any configuration file. Now, this won't work for me with the invited drivers and the dual screens. All I'll get is just one screen. If I had one screen and basic, that would have been fine. But with dual screens and an invited driver, I'm stuck with a custom XOR config file. One thing I've noticed also is that for the fonts, now I'm not exactly sure about that. I've been having a XOR config file with all my custom fonts in there. I'm not exactly positive if I need to do that another way once this XOR configuration file is eliminated completely. And I guess the goal is to go ahead and eliminate the file completely. One remaining problem was that the XOR config file is a single file and not easy to programmably edit. So that's why they want to go through the directory, xorconfig.d directory. And ideally what you could do then was, I guess when I was talking about the fonts, is that you could have one file just for your fonts, one file just for your monitor, one file just for any custom keyboard and mouse settings, and that way that you could just monitor one file. The xorconfig.d.config files are read and parsed as well. I'm pretty sure they're read after that directory. They're read first, then the directory is read second, and then those defaults are read third. It performs like expected, with a section being added just as it was present in the XOR config. Okay, yeah, here it is in my notes. Yeah, the XOR config is parsed before the XOR config D, hence it always has precedence. This allows for distributions to populate the xorg.configd directory with various quirks, yet still have user-specific configuration in the good old xorg.config. To better support snippet-based xorg config, a new tag has been introduced, auto server layout. Technically, any input device needs to be referenced from the server layout section to become active. With auto server layout, an input device may be present in any layout. Hence your input configuration, you would have numerous input device sections. So regardless of which layout is started, this way you would have, if you had an input device with the Symptatix touchpad in it, and you had auto server layout on, regardless of which layout is started, the touchpad will always be part of the input device list. With hot plugging support, much of the configuration wandering into HAL FDI files, this was never the best solution, but at the time the only available one. With UDEV, the FDI files went away, and instead of requiring users to port HAL-specific configuration to UDEV-specific configuration, the XORG developers have stepped in and wrote a set of patches that allow similar functionality to the FDI configuration as part of the XOR config or xorg.config.d. Basically, you take the different keywords that were in the FDI files and they are just transposed into the xorg.config.d directory files or your XORG config file. Basically, the same ones that were in the FDI files, you know, match product, match vendor, match device path, match keyboard, match is pointer, matches joystick, on and on and on and on. So basically it's just moving into these input classes for Symptatix, catch-all, evdev, catch-all, etc., etc. There's a whole pile of guides and how-tos on the web about these different input class sections for your inside your directory. What I would do is, like I said, I've always failed, but I haven't failed on just a regular install. Like at work, I have a Gen 2 installed with XORG 1.9 running straight UDEV, but it's just a single monitor, and I'm actually using a Radeon driver, all open source stuff, not this Nvidia driver, and it works a lot better for me using the new style configuration files. With this Nevada, so it gets a little bit more specific, and like I said, it's working, so I'm not going to fool with it. So it's just something else we're going to have to learn to deal with if you have any problems. Hopefully, you won't have any trouble at all, and the defaults will work just fine, and you'll be able to start X without any problems at all. All right, thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Have a great new year, and we'll see you for the next podcast. Bye-bye.